Thank you very much, dear listeners of iRab English Radio Color Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulema's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qarati. To find out more about this program, please log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Color Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the holy month of Ramadan has taught us resistance. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So we are quickly coming to a close and an end of the holy month of Ramadan. It's interesting, we find in the du'as and in Sahifa Sajjadiyya, in these statements of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, the fourth divinely appointed Imam, that the holy month of Ramadan was like this blessed and very honorable and holy and divine companion that we had. And so even though we are happy that we were able to, you know, worship Allah and obey Allah at least the best that we could, and this makes us happy, but on the other hand, because we are losing this divine companion, this divine friend who had accompanied us for, you know, 29 or 30 days, we are losing this friend, and this friend is leaving us, and this makes us sad. And these are the words of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam. The holy month of Ramadan is coming to an end, unfortunately, and we should feel some level of anxiety, and in a positive sense, of course, you know, this kind of dread or this worry that we were so easily forgiven for our sins in this holy month of Ramadan. The acts of worship that we did in this holy month, they were multiplied so many times fold. You know, the recitation of the Quran, it was like, you know, as the traditions say, reciting one verse of the holy Quran in this holy month of Ramadan is like reciting the whole Quran in the other months. Our fasting was accepted, you know. There's so many things that we will lose, and that does cause a little bit of worry, a little bit of sadness. The holy month of Ramadan, what we wanted to talk about is this idea of resistance. Through the fasting from the morning until the night and the controlling of one's various different desires and passions and controlling of the self, all of this in reality is teaching us resistance.
رمضان المستبين جاء بالنور المبين رمضان 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 القانتين.
Welcome back. This is A2Z on IRIB English Radio. So we're talking about how the holy month of Ramadan teaches us resistance. And we had left off the last segment. We were talking about how, you know, we were fasting from morning until night. You know, we stopped ourselves and refrained and controlled ourselves from, you know, basic human instincts, if you will, which is to eat and to drink. At the same time, we also, you know, controlled ourselves, our different desires, our passions. You know, we did our best to control the various different faculties that we have and use them for the cause of Allah and in order to strengthen Islam as best as we could, of course. All of these things, they teach us resistance. Now, this resistance, of course, is something that gives strength to a human being. With all the different difficulties that we face in, you know, our modern present-day life is full of difficulties, hardships, stress, anxiety, tension, you know. I mean, like, look at the statistics of how many people die from heart attacks or they die from hypertension. So, you know, this is the kind of life that we are living in. And, of course, it just seems like that the means and the facilities to be able to sin have just increased beyond imagination. And so in this kind of a suffocating environment, right, first and foremost, we pray that Allah hasten the reappearance of the Imam of the time. But in such kind of suffocating environment, it's really necessary for us to be able to have this power of resistance. And this is what the holy month of Ramadan has taught us, this power of resistance, so that, of course, you know, through our daily life, we are able to resist all the different things that we are faced with, that we are powerful and steadfast, and ultimately so that we can reach our Islamic lifestyle.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
The limelight.
Starvation is getting worse in North Gaza, where 31% of children under the age of 2 are suffering from acute malnutrition, a percentage which has doubled since January. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, approximately 300,000 people remain trapped in northern Gaza facing heightened susceptibility to disease due to severe hunger. Residents in northern Gaza are barely surviving on an average of 245 calories per day, according to a statement released by the international NGO Oxfam. This intake represents less than 12% of an adult's daily caloric needs and don't consider access to proper nutrition, according to the statement. The scarcity of fruits and vegetables, coupled with extreme price hikes, has made them unattainable for most. Additionally, specialized nutrition products and malnutrition treatment centers are scarce or inaccessible, Oxfam noted. Before the war, we were in good health and had strong bodies. Now, looking at my children and myself, we have lost so much weight. Since we do not eat any proper food, we are trying to eat whatever we find, edible wild plants or herbs daily just to survive, a mother trapped in northern Gaza told Oxfam. Approximately 300,000 people remain trapped in the area facing heightened susceptibility to disease due to severe hunger. The situation is compounded by the Zionist regime's extensive destruction of civilian infrastructure, including hospitals and water and sanitation services in Gaza. Oxfam International Executive Director Amitabh Bahar said, "Israel is making deliberate choices to starve civilians. Imagine what it is like, not only to be trying to survive on 245 calories day in, day out, but also having to watch your children or elderly relatives do the same. All while displaced with little to no access to clean water or a toilet, knowing most medical support has gone and under the constant threat of drones and bombs." Oxfam's analysis of the latest Integrated Food Security Phase Classification IPC data for the Gaza Strip reveals alarming figures. Since last October, total food deliveries to the entire population of Gaza, approximately 2.2 million people, have only provided 41% of the daily calories needed per person. The IPC findings underscored the imminent threat of famine in northern Gaza, with nearly the entire population experiencing extreme hunger. Shockingly, 1.1 million people are now facing catastrophic food insecurity. These statistics paint a bleak picture of the humanitarian crisis unfolding in Gaza, highlighting the urgent need for immediate and substantial intervention to address food shortages and prevent widespread starvation. Bahar said, "Israel is ignoring both the International Court of Justice order to prevent genocide and UN Security Council resolutions. Only last week, the ICJ ordered new provisional measures stating famine is no longer looming but setting in Gaza," adding that the international community must stop arming Israel and impose an immediate ceasefire. According to the Oxfam official, only then we can stop this horrifying carnage for the 2.2 million people who have endured 6 months of suffering. Israel cannot weaponize starvation any longer. Currently on trial before the International Court of Justice for genocide against Palestinians, the Zionist regime has been waging a devastating war on Gaza. According to Gaza's Ministry of Health, at least 33,037 Palestinians have been murdered and at least 75,668 wounded in the Zionist regime's ongoing genocide in Gaza starting on October 7th. Moreover, at least 7,000 people are unaccounted for, presumed dead under the rubble of their homes throughout the Gaza Strip. Palestinian and international organizations say the majority of those killed and wounded are women and children. The Israeli regime aggression has also resulted in the forceful displacement of nearly 2 million people from all over the Gaza Strip, with the vast majority of the displaced forced into densely crowded southern city of Rafah near the border with Egypt in what has become Palestine's largest mass exodus since 1948 Nakba. Meanwhile, a new report by the Geneva-based Euromed Human Rights Monitor reveals the killing of 563 Palestinians and the injury of 1,523 others due to the Zionist regime's targeting of people waiting for aid, distribution centers, and workers responsible for organizing, protecting, and distributing aid. Released recently, the report titled Killing Starving Palestinians and Targeting Aid Trucks, a Deliberate Israeli Policy to Reinforce Famine in the Gaza Strip, documents incidents between January 11th and March 23, 2024. During that period, Euromed Monitor documented that 256 people were killed in the Kuwait roundabout area in the southeast of Gaza City, 230 on Al-Rashid Street in the southwest of the city, and 21 due to the targeting of aid distribution centers. Documentation also shows that 41 police officers and People's Protection Committee members who were in charge of overseeing aid distribution were killed, along with 12 aid distribution workers, two of whom were from the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees, UNRWA. Evidence suggests that Israel intentionally perpetrates these crimes, including direct military attacks on humanitarian aid and civilians, as part of a deliberate and overarching policy, the reporter stated, adding, "This is evident from the systematic pattern and regular, almost daily recurrence of Israel's commission of these crimes, as well as the high number of victims affected by them." Euromed Monitor said one of the most dangerous forms of unlawful killings and executions carried out by the Israeli army against Palestinian civilians recently is the systematic targeting of civilian gatherings around humanitarian aid trucks with direct gunfire, quadcopters, and Israeli tank shells, especially on the Kuwait and Nablusi roundabouts in the south of Gaza City, which have been dubbed the Flower Massacres. The report lists the various incidents of starving civilians waiting for humanitarian aid being targeted by Israeli forces as follows. On March 23, 2024, 30 Palestinians were murdered and 80 others injured after the Israeli regime army opened fire at those waiting for aid trucks near the Kuwait roundabout on Salahuddin Road south of Gaza City. On March 14, 2024, Israeli regime army forces opened heavy fire on thousands of civilians who had gathered near the Kuwait roundabout on Salahuddin Road in southern Gaza City using tanks, helicopters, and drones. The shooting left more than 80 dead and 200 injured, with a number of them left in critical condition. The next morning, the Zionist regime army forces opened fire on residents who returned to the scene in an attempt to retrieve the bodies of the victims. Many of the bodies had been left underground overnight, as Israeli gunfire had made it difficult for them to be transferred. And on March 13th, six Palestinians were murdered and others injured while waiting for aid supplies to arrive at the Kuwait roundabout on the outskirts of Gaza City.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Youth Station, Choo Choo Kachu. It's Youth Station for you. I'm your humble co-host, Muzaffar Haider.
And I am Asma.
So, sister, how are you doing?
Fine, thank you.
How is your iman doing? That's more important. The most important gift that you have is your iman.
Yes, I guess it's okay. Mm-hmm. It's doing fine.
What I want to ask is, this is kind of self-confidence that we have, alhamdulillah. Mm-hmm. But how certain can we really be about it?
About our confidence?
Yeah.
About
the situation in Iran is completely different to what I had to face. So when I was in school, I was constantly being bullied and harassed and, you know, pressured when it comes to Islam and when it comes to God, right? The existence of God itself. And so this is when I was back in school in England, right? And lots of the people there outside of London are very, very ignorant about a lot of things. Like, it's really, really scary, actually. They won't know the difference between a nationality and a religion. They'll think that they are the same. Oh. They'll think that if you are from England, you must be Christian. If you are from, like, they wouldn't know the difference between an Indian and a Muslim. They think that all Indians are Muslim. It's really, really bizarre. So I was facing that.
How come? In today?
Yeah, I know, exactly.
Like, in today's world?
It was shocking. It was shocking. Because before that, I had spent my whole life in London. But when I was around 12 or 13, then we moved to Kent, which is just outside of London. London is full of cosmopolitan people. Like, there's black people, brown people, yellow people, you know, from every walk of life. And there's lots of different religions, and everybody's living together, and they can learn from each other. Outside of London, though, pretty much everybody's white.
Yeah.
And really ignorant. Unbelievable. Anyway, so I had to really, really struggle to fight back against certain people who were really clever. Because even in that kind of society, you still have certain people who stand out. Like my history teacher, for example. Open, flagrant atheist, militant atheist. And he used to try to, you know, force this atheist ideology into the students when we were just like 11, 12.
Oh.
So I once said to him, for example, I said, "Sir, if I were to tell you that there was a jungle, you're a logical man, right? If I were to tell you that there was a jungle and no civilization had ever stepped foot in there, no human being had ever gone in there, and yet, miraculously, all the trees cut themselves down and then they erected themselves into these beautiful houses and a village and a city was formed, but no human being ever even went inside, what would you say?" And he said, "Well, that's ridiculous. Absolutely impossible." I said to him, "Exactly. That's what you're saying about the entire universe, that it was just created by accident."
Yeah.
You get it? So he was completely silenced, and the whole class kind of erupted. They're like, "Wow, sir," because I had to face this kind of stuff. And it really strengthened my, like, core beliefs, alhamdulillah. Before I came to Iran, I had a solid conviction in Allah. I knew, like, with 100%, without a shadow of doubt, alhamdulillah, about Allah and about Islam in general. The kids in Iran are facing something completely different. And just like every society will face different things, in Iran, they're being challenged on far higher things.
Exactly.
Right? They're having to challenge. Okay, fine. We accept Allah. We accept the Islamic revolution. We accept Allah. We accept the deen. Now we're talking about forming an Islamic government, you know, and the different, you know, debates that exist there. So it's really, really different.
So there's this think that, you know, there's two sides to each narrative. Like, the one who's saying it as, I mean, we all have different perspectives. Like, I for sure would think that my perspective is the truest. And this is the whole truth.
Yeah.
Like, what I'm saying is the ultimate truth, and what the other people say does not have a 1% of truth in it. But then the thing is that we must not look at things like this. Like, it's not like I'm always the right person and the other people and whatever they're saying is wrong. We always must give some chances, leave some doors open for new ideas.
Absolutely.
Like, you must accept the enemies, the opponents, the adversaries' ideas, this opponent ideas, so that you could improve your own thoughts. Like, the foundation of your own thoughts must be much more strengthened this way.
Yeah, you need to be listening, really, really listening to what other people are saying.
It's actually a skill and an art to have an idea, to think that you're right, but at the same time, give a chance and opportunity for other ideas to sprout out in your mind.
Well, at the same time, we have to understand that the West has spread this idea of objective reality, that reality is, you know, relative. So, for example, between me and you, sister, right, like, there's a six. I'm going to draw a six on the floor, right? From your perspective, it's a six. From my perspective, it's a nine.
Yeah.
Because I'm looking at it upside down. So I saw this meme and this kind of picture, and they were saying that, look, it's relative. For this person, it's six. For this person, it's nine. But then the philosopher comes along and he says, no, the person who wrote that on the ground, they had an intention. There is a reality behind it.
And then they came with the idea of death of author. Then the intention is no matter important. In the realm of literature, like, there were different schools of thought when you criticize a work of art. We have formalism, we have a structuralism, and before that we had a long history again. But what happens is that after formalism, they came with this idea.
What's formalism?
Formalism is to go for the text itself.
Okay.
Like, the text itself is self-sufficient and it will tell you everything. You don't have to go for the intention of the author and whatsoever. The text would shout and foreground itself for you. Like, you don't have to go for the intention of the author and for his or her biography or the background, whatever. Historical or cultural or religious background of the author. So you put the author aside, and then at this point there comes this idea of death of the author. But honestly speaking, I don't believe in that, because
is that when you just ignore the author?
Yeah, just forget about the author and go for the text and the words and the language, because language is everything. We are imprisoned in this prison house of language. Language is ruling over us.
I wish it was that simple, innit? You could just completely delete the author and look at the text itself.
Yeah, yeah. It's not that easy. Like, as an author, when I write something, I try to convey my meaning by words, but these words are not self-sufficient. Sometimes words are the matter of misunderstanding. Like, I mean to say something, but the words are not compatible with what I'm saying. So now, just put that aside. I was just coming to that relative reality that you were talking about, like the objectivity of people. We all have our own perspective and point of view, but the thing is, it's like a box. You have to think outside that box sometimes, at least sometimes, and we have to develop that sort of understanding of other people's perspective as well. Like, when some person is telling me, someone is coming to me, telling me something that I would call that notion, that word, that saying as a nonsense, well, give it a second thought. Maybe it has got something to share.
Yeah. I think you also need to look at the author himself. The person who's speaking, I mean, in this context.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to listen to everybody. You should look at the purity of the person. Mm-hmm. Some people might say, look at the intelligence of a person. That's true as well. Some people might say, look at the honesty of a person. You know, that's true as well. But I think really what you're looking for is the purity of a person. Because even a person who, a child, for example, sometimes they can say things that are just really profound. My son, he never does anything. He's just always tottering around. And he just comes over and he says, if you don't know where you are, you're probably lost. It was really profound. So we all just went really quiet. We were just like, why did he just say that? You know? Anyway, my point is, carry on.
Okay, yeah, that's very true. Sometimes you get some ideas from the people you do not even count as so wise people.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Sometimes you get an idea from this friend of yours who you always thought that they are not so wise to share any idea.
Thank you, sister.
Among my friends, there are those whom I don't think they would come with some handy advices at some moments and in some occasions, but it happens. It happens that you get some words of wisdom from people that you do not expect from them, those words. So it's something that you have to gain by maturity. Just as we grow older, we would learn how to be flexible with ideas and do not go for it directly as subjective as you have it in your mind.
Yeah. Also, we have to remember the very, very important hadith of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim wassalam, where they taught us, Inna lillahi ala nasi hujjatain. Surely from Allah upon the people there are two hujjas, two proofs, undeniable, irrefutable proofs, hujjas. Hujjatan zahiran wa hujjatan batina. There is an external hujja and an internal hujja. And he said, as for the external hujja, it is the Prophet and the Imams, alayhim wassalam. And as for the internal hujja, it is the aql,
wisdom,
the intellect.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This aql of ours, this intellect of ours, pure intellect, is always going to point us in the right direction. So there does come a point where you have to ignore what other people are saying when something is absolutely proven to you through logical, rational arguments.
But yes. Then, still, we are in that point that you should not take everything for granted. Like, you hear things and you just ignore them. Don't be like that. Even we have it as in the Holy Book of Quran that the wise people are those who listen to all the words and they would get the best of those words.
Follow the best of it. Yeah,
yeah, they would follow the best of it. So do not take anything for granted and do not look them down. Because sometimes there is a point of wisdom in the things that you hear, even though you do not think of them that way. So it's not that you're always the right person.
I think that's the best advice. You listen to everything.
Yeah.
You don't follow everything. You can't follow everything, actually. You're going to have to choose one of them.
Exactly.
One of the options.
So. But then follow the best according to that internal light that you were talking about.
Yeah.
According to the narrations, which is the external light. So you can choose the best of words, the best of advices in your life, and then make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess this was all. Sometimes other people's are right.
Yeah.
So give a chance to other people's advice and ideas. Maybe that's the truest thing you have to do. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. This was all for today. Until another session, I just bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings, be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about
this. We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Allah, 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 Allah.
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The United Nations Human Rights Council has adopted a resolution calling on Israel to be held accountable for war crimes and crimes against humanity committed in the Gaza Strip. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Hours after US President Joe Biden told Israel to take concrete steps to protect civilians and aid workers in Gaza or risk losing military support from the United States, top members of President's Democratic Party ramped up pressure on the White House to go further. The progressive Senator Bernie Sanders was among the strongest voices. Bernie Sanders said Israel should not be getting another nickel in military aid until it markedly facilitates the flow of provisions into a region that the US suspects is already grappling with famine. Bernie Sanders told CNN on Thursday, 4th of April, "We're looking at one of the worst humanitarian disasters that we have seen in the very, very long time, because Israel is not allowing humanitarian trucks into Gaza, and especially into the areas where people are in most desperate condition." Sanders added, "It was not the US's job to worry about how Gaza may tie into the political future of the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu." The Vermont senator added, "My view is no more military aid to Israel when children are starving in Gaza." Meanwhile, the Democratic Senator Chris Van Hollen of Maryland insisted that President Biden enforce a national security memorandum signed in February that aimed to condition the transfer of military weaponry to Israel on its adherence to humanitarian benchmarks. Senator Van Hollen said topping the list of policies that President Biden could leverage against Israel is the suspension of transferring offensive weapons to the occupied Palestinian territories if it fails at reducing civilian harm or getting desperately needed assistance to people in need. Democratic Senator Van Hollen alluded to the policy days after Israeli airstrikes assassinated seven employees of the international food charity World Central Kitchen. Following the attack, a cargo ship carrying 240 tons of food destined for Gaza returned to Cyprus. The Democratic senator from Massachusetts, Elizabeth Warren, said she would seek to impede the sale of F-15s to the occupied Palestinian territories after the assassination of the World Central Kitchen staffers, which included a US-Canadian citizen and three British nationals. A day before the World Central Kitchen workers were massacred, a report surfaced that the Biden administration was mulling an $18 billion arms transfer package to Israel that would include more than two dozen F-15 fighter jets. Democratic Senator from Massachusetts, Elizabeth Warren, told CNN, "We cannot approve the sale of arms to a regime that is in violation of our own laws on this, and that includes access to humanitarian relief. This is a moral question, it is also a legal question. Congress has responsibility here, and I'm willing to take that responsibility." Bernie Sanders, Senators Van Hollen and Warren are all part of a 51-49 majority that Democrats and independents who caucus with them hold in the U.S. Senate. President Biden and his administration have generally stood in steadfast support of Israel, which has struck Gaza on land and by air after the 7th of October surprise operation by Hamas. But with the martyrdom toll in Gaza climbing above 30,000 and the humanitarian crisis worsening, the United States, which provides Israel with at least $3.8 billion in security assistance annually, recently abstained from a United Nations vote, which resulted in a resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. President Biden on Thursday, 4th of April, for the first time called for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza as well. The website Reddit has also covered the same story and tells us more. World Central Kitchen has rejected as lacking credibility the findings of an Israeli investigation led by a former general into a coordinated series of Israeli drone strikes on the charity's vehicles in Gaza recently that assassinated seven aid workers. As the Israeli occupation forces blamed a series of grave errors for the deadly attack that assassinated three British nationals, three other foreign nationals, and a Palestinian colleague while delivering food, World Central Kitchen renewed its call for a full and independent inquiry into the incident. Amid mounting international pressure on the Israeli regime, the British Foreign Secretary David Cameron said the findings of the Israeli inquiry, which he said the UK was reviewing carefully, showed that major reform was required. David Cameron said on X social media platform, "It's clear major reform of Israel's deconfliction mechanism is badly needed to ensure the safety of aid workers." The hurriedly completed inquiry, which led to two middle-ranking officers being dismissed and a general reprimanded in the Israeli army, outlined a catalogue of failings by Israeli forces in an attack that has reinforced global criticism of Israel's conduct of a war in which more than 33,000 Palestinians have been massacred in the past 6 months. While welcoming the report as a first step, the founder of World Central Kitchen, the celebrity chef Jose Andres, said the Israeli military cannot credibly investigate its own failure in Gaza. It's not enough to simply try to avoid further humanitarian deaths, which have now approached close to 200. All civilians need to be protected and all innocent people in Gaza need to be fed and safe, and all captives must be released. The charity's chief executive, Erin Gore, said, "Their apologies for the outrageous massacring of our colleagues represent cold comfort. It's cold comfort for the victims' families and World Central Kitchen's global family. Israel needs to take concrete steps to assure the safety of humanitarian aid workers. Our operations remain suspended in Gaza." World Central Kitchen's remarks were echoed by the UN Secretary-General Antonio Guterres, who said fixing failings in Israel's military procedures required independent investigations and meaningful and measurable changes on the ground, noting that 196 humanitarian aid workers have been assassinated during Israel's brutal assault on Gaza. Antonio Guterres said, We want to know why. The announcement of punishments and the apology have not calmed the international outcry over the World Central Kitchen workers' deaths or reassured international aid groups that it is safe to resume operations in Gaza, where nearly a third of the population is on the brink of starvation. The Reuters news agency has also covered the same story. The United Nations Human Rights Council has adopted a resolution calling for Israel to be held accountable for war crimes and crimes against humanity committed in the Gaza Strip. The resolution came as Israel finally succumbed to unprecedented US pressure and opened new food corridors into Gaza. The vote by the United Nations Human Rights Council, a body that Israel reviles, marks another moment in the slow global ostracization of Israel over its war in Gaza, which has so far massacred tens of thousands of innocent Palestinians. 28 countries voted in favor, 13 countries abstained from the vote, and 6 voted against the resolution, including the United States and Germany. The resolution emphasized the need to ensure accountability for all violations of international humanitarian law and international human rights law in order to end impunity. It also expressed grave concern at reports of serious human rights violations and grave breaches of international humanitarian law, including of possible war crimes and crimes against humanity in the occupied Palestinian territories. The resolution follows what appears to have been a decisive phone call between Joe Biden and Benjamin Netanyahu on Thursday, 4th of April, in which Joe Biden warned US policy towards Gaza would change if Israel continued to defy calls to alter its approach to the supply of aid to the population of Gaza.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered on June 23, 2015 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with government officials on the occasion of the month of Ramadan. Another essential task is to confront unnecessary imports and smuggling in a serious way. Attending to small and medium-sized production workshops is another essential task. I stress the necessity of this matter in the beginning of the year as well. Reviewing monetary policies and the activities of the banking system of the country, I also spoke about this matter in the beginning of the year. Reviewing monetary policies and the activities of the banking system of the country, I also spoke about this matter in the beginning of the year, is another important task. Experts and sympathetic personalities have certain things to say in this regard, and their opinions should be heard and receive attention. These are tasks that we should carry out. Of course, the main condition for achieving all these things is harmony and unanimity, and the solidarity that the Honorable President touched on.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today,
and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The administration should be assisted. Officials should be assisted because they are in the middle of the arena. Unnecessary opposition and controversy should be avoided. Causing controversy, no matter who does so, is unacceptable and inappropriate. Everyone should help so that, God willing, this great movement will produce results. This was what we wanted to say on the issue of the economy. I believe that we can accomplish great feats in the area of the economy. We can hope that by Allah's favor, we will pass through this difficult road. On the nuclear issue, I will first raise three introductory points, and then I will discuss certain matters in this regard. The first point is that what I say in this meeting and in other public meetings is exactly the same things that I say to officials, the Honorable President, and others in private meetings. Some people say that the red lines that have been officially announced are sidelined in private meetings. This is a false and untrue statement, and it is a propaganda tool that they use. We have witnessed and are witnessing this. What we say to you in this meeting or in other public meetings is exactly the same things that we discuss with our friends in the administration and with the negotiating team. Our statements in both meetings are the same.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. I want to thank you.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Thousands of Austrians marched under the slogan "Stop the genocide, stop the occupation" in the capital Vienna. The Palestine Committee and Palestine Solidarity Austria organized the demonstration. The march was held on Saturday, a week after house raids of Palestinian activists in the city of Linz. Police recently also interrogated protesters in other cities. International Quds Day was an aspiration for the organizers of Saturday's protest.
And all these commemoration days is to really say, wake up, we are really in the situation where people are getting killed every day and we have to stop it as soon as possible.
Organizers also criticized a four-day visit of the President of the Austrian Parliament, Wolfgang Sobotka, to Israel this week.
Well, obviously, when looking at the last 6 months, there's been some unconditional support for Israel, obviously, and their action in the Gaza Strip, which is absolutely unacceptable.
Several speakers stressed Austrian solidarity with Palestinians in war-torn Gaza as the US-Israeli genocidal war continues unabated. They said the Austrian government does not speak for them.
It's the most obvious wrongdoing that I've ever seen in my life.
The protesters called for support for Lebanon and Yemen against US imperialist aggression. People from around the world joined the Vienna march.
I was born in Chile under a dictatorship and I have a lot of Palestinian friends. I am even wearing a t-shirt from a team called Palestina, who was founded by Palestinian migrants several years ago. I couldn't be in peace with myself if I wasn't here demonstrating and saying and raising my voice, at least.
Representatives of Jewish organizations such as Not In Our Name stressed their continued solidarity with the Palestinian struggles. Organizers said all Austrians must continue to protest against the US-Israeli genocide and their government support for it, despite the repression.
We cannot call ourselves humans, regardless of our nationalities or political views or religions, and be indifferent about what's going on nowadays in Gaza.
Thousands marched in the Austrian capital Vienna in support of the people and the resistance in Gaza as the Israeli genocide war claims more civilian lives. Despite Austria's repression, the state and the police were unable to stop the Palestine solidarity movement. Saturday's demonstration has once again shown that the support for Gaza remains strong in Austria. Dieter Reinisch, Vienna.
With a military parade, Hezbollah marked International Quds Day in Lebanon, where hundreds of Lebanese and Palestinians raised their fists in a show of support for the resistance group and its leader. Hezbollah Secretary General underscored the significance of the Lebanese front and raised his voice in response to the Israeli threat, saying the resistance in Lebanon is fully prepared for any war.
The resistance in Lebanon does not fear war. It has managed battle in the last 6 months with a clear strategy and a vision which is complementary to the ongoing battle in the region. The resistance has managed the battle in a manner that would lead to victory while protecting Lebanon. However, it is fully prepared morally, mentally, and militarily for any war which the enemy would regret having launched against Lebanon.
Hezbollah's leader downplayed the ability of the Israeli regime to launch a full-scale war on Lebanon with the fact that it is extremely exhausted and has achieved none of its declared objectives, except for the killing of innocent women and children. And despite the sacrifices, he said, the alliance of resistance is on the path to a historic and major victory.
Based on logic and political, military, diplomatic, regional, international and economic information, we are able to see very clearly what the leader of the Iranian revolution had said during the first days of the war, that Israel will be defeated and that Gaza will be victorious, and Netanyahu will have no choice but to stop the war, which will be a historic and major victory for the resistance in the region.
A significant part of the speech touched upon the Iranian role in supporting the resistance factions and the oppressed people of the region. It also confirmed that the Iranian response to the Israeli attack on the consular section of the Iranian embassy in Damascus will certainly come, and that everyone needs to be ready for what may lie ahead after this retaliation.
We are very close to a victory since the blood that has been shed in Gaza and Lebanon and from all our brothers will be fruitful. This is why this year is exceptional and it has a very positive impact on our hearts and has given us hope that a big victory is possible.
It's not just the duty of Muslims to take part in Al-Quds Day, but also as human beings all over the world, since it proves their humanity.
We are here not to support just Gaza, we are supporting all Palestine, the resistance in all region. We'll elaborate Palestine and Al-Quds, and we will win, inshallah.
Hezbollah's leader also noted that Al-Aqsa flood has put Israel's existence in danger and exposed its vulnerabilities, and those who should be ashamed are the ones who have normalized ties with Israel.
Al-Quds Day this year is distinct on all levels. Loud actions have been made, not only in support of the Palestinian people, but in establishing what could turn into a tangible plan to end the occupation of the Holy Land. Mariam Saleh, Beirut.
The International Quds Day this year comes following Israel's airstrike on the consular section of Iran's embassy in Damascus that killed 7 Iranian military officers. This latest Israeli attack, together with over 6 months of regime's genocide in Gaza, prompted thousands of Iranians to pour into the streets across the country to mark Quds Day.
Recently, there was an incident in which we were all heartbroken and devastated, as two of the top Iranian generals were killed and our country's embassy was air targeted. This act was against international and human rights law. As an Iranian and a Jew, we condemn this issue.
Quds Day is commemorated all over the world on the last Friday of Ramadan. It is a day of international solidarity with the Palestinian people. Just like previous years, the Iranian Jew community also joined other protesters to express their support for Palestinians in Gaza. This community believes that the United Nations and the Western countries have been totally inactive over the ongoing genocide.